Hey, today I want to begin a new sermon series simply titled Church. Sounds like a good way to kick off September. And there's three questions that I want to explore together over these next 4 weeks. What is church? What is the purpose of church? And do we even need church? Three questions for us to journey through together over the next 4 weeks. And let me give you a little background as to how this series was birthed. How did this series come about? If you were here a couple of weeks ago, I referenced three different studies. I kept thinking about these studies because I felt like there was a whole bunch of wisdom contained within these numbers, the statistics, the different studies, and what they were saying about where we are as a culture and what these studies have to say about the church. I guess specifically you could say the church here in America. Let me, if you missed those studies, if you weren't here, I think it was 5 weeks ago, or if you need a refresher because you are still on summer mode, let me show you these three studies. First, this is a study from the Gallup poll, and it shows that since 2002, if you see on the top line there, our desire for community has gone up. It has risen 23%. Now, to me, that makes a whole lot of sense because we just went through this period known as COVID lockdowns. I see a few of you convulsing when I just referenced that phrase. You all remember how that was. And in the beginning, everything was okay. We were just joking about doing Zoom worship next week. But in the beginning, everything was okay. We're like, oh, this is kind of novel. This is cool. We still get to gather with each other. We can still talk to each other. But then we had this thing called Zoom fatigue. Maybe you experienced this. In the beginning of COVID, with all the lockdowns, when you couldn't go places, you couldn't wait to get on a Zoom call with one of your friends and talk about the craziness that's going on in the world. Well, then over time, the novelty began to fade, and the thought of going on another Zoom call, it's like all that energy that was in your spirit just fled away. You know what I'm talking about? Did you all experience this like me? You're like, no, I can't do another Zoom call. What we realized during COVID was how much we need each other, how much we desire each other's presence, how much just simply gathering together on a Sunday morning so that we can sing together, so that we can talk, see each other in the flesh, shake hands, give a hug, fist pump, whatever you're comfortable, elbow pump, right, whatever you're comfortable doing. There was something about that time that made us realize we need each other. So to me, this statistic, it makes a whole lot of sense because we went through a period of time where we didn't have access to community. You couldn't just simply go out, walk out your door, and go see your friends. So since 2002, the desire for community is up 23%. But if you notice the last line there, the desire for religion is actually in the negative. It is down 7%. Less people are desiring to experience some formal type of religion. Let's go to the next study. And if you see these numbers here, this is another Gallup poll. Church membership among U.S. adults is now below 50%. And as you can see from this chart here, that number keeps declining. It's not moving in the positive. It's continuing to move in the negative. This is a trend that has been going on for quite a while. Church attendance in the U.S. is becoming less and less. And actually, the number of times that people who go to church, attend church in any given month, is also on the decline as well. So we have this strong desire for community, but for religion, for going to church, not so much. Here's another study that shows the U.S. Christians projected to fall below 50% of the population if this trend continues. The desire for church, for being part of a community of fellow Christians, is on the decline. Now, let's look at another study, third study, and this is from the Barna Group. This one, rising spiritual openness in America. And if you look at that last line right there, they ask people, are you more open to God today than you were before the pandemic? 44% of people said, yeah, I'm more open to God today than I was 3, 4, 5 years ago, this number is actually greater than what it was pre-COVID. So when I look at all these studies, here's what I gather. The desire for community is on the increase. The desire for church or for more formalized religion is on the decrease. But the openness to spirituality is on the increase. As I sat with these numbers, these studies, what they were saying, maybe you're like me. For me, this raised all sorts of questions. Here's a few of them. Well, why aren't people looking to the church to fulfill their desires for community and spirituality? If there's rising spiritual openness, why is it that people aren't looking to the church in order to fulfill this desire? If there's this strong desire for community, well, then why aren't people, because church, at the heart of what church is all about, it's all about community. So another question, well, why isn't the church seen as a place that fosters community and spiritual exploration? This is what many of us in our culture are desiring. Well, why isn't the church seen as the place that fosters the very things that people are looking for? Maybe another way of asking this is, could something about the church be broken? For me, these studies, these questions have driven this series. So along with, well, what is church, its purpose, do we need it? These are some of the questions that I want to explore together over the next couple of weeks. Now, let's start at the beginning. Let's start really, really basic, because this seems like a good place to start whenever you start a series called church. Let's define what we're talking about when we use the word church. And disclaimer, today we're going to go really basic. We're going to kind of be up here today, and we'll get into some more of those details over the next couple of weeks. We cool with that? So let's get a really, really basic definition of church. What do we mean when we say the word church? And let's pause for a moment here. And I'd love for you to formulate in your mind, when I use the word church, when you hear the word church, what do you think of? Is there an image? Certain words? Descriptors that come to mind? Let me throw it back at you here for a moment. Can we do some participation this morning? So when I use the word church, what do you guys think of? Body of Christ, all right. Community, sometimes building, yeah, sure. I mean, just this idea. I remember we had a guest speaker one time, and he was talking about how he was training his kids to not say, we're going to church, because sometimes church becomes associated with a particular building. Hold those images, those words, those phrases in your mind, and now let's explore this question a bit. We'll start here in Acts chapter 8, verse 3. We come across Saul, who is pre-Paul. Many of you know Paul. He's the Apostle Paul. He's written much of the New Testament. Before he becomes Paul, he's the person formerly known as Saul. Now, Saul was someone who went around the ancient world persecuting followers of Jesus. This was his main goal. This was the one thing that he wanted to do with his life. His main thing was going around and persecuting Christians. So we're told here in Acts, Saul began to destroy the church. How did he do this? Going from house to house, he dragged off both men and women and put them in prison. Notice this. How did Paul begin destroying the church? He went from, what were we told? House to house. Notice, we are not told that he went from church to church. He went from house to house. This is very, very important to note. If this was being written about our culture today, well, we'll get into that here in a second. But if we were, this was written about our culture today, here's how this verse probably would have been written. Paul began to destroy the church, going from church to church. So Paul would come here. Some of you would be dragged off to prison. Maybe row E. Maybe you guys look like you'd be the ones that would be dragged off to prison by Paul. Paul would leave here. He'd go down the street to the Presbyterian church. And then he would leave that church. He'd go to the next non-denominational church. And then he would go to this one, to this one, to this one. From church to church, Paul would go in. He would drag out some of the men, some of the women, and he would place them into jail. But this isn't what we're told in Acts, because this isn't what the church look like? Paul went from house to house. Now, why is this important? Here's what this tells me. It tells me that the form of church is cultural. In the first century, church met in homes. Take this a little bit deeper. This tells me there is nothing sacred about the form of church that exists today. Sometimes we make the form the thing. Well, let me tell you how church is. We raise enough money so that we can buy a building, and then we own this building. We put a couple offices for our pastors. Then we open the building on Sunday morning so that we can do three worship songs, which, yes, it's what we do here, three worship songs. Then we have a time of greeting. Then we have a sermon. Then we close with another worship song. Then we all go off. We leave the building. And then maybe some different activities happen within the building throughout the week. But the truth is, there is nothing sacred about this form that exists today here in America. If you were to ask some of the first century Christians, even the writers of the New Testament, what do you think about the church and how it looks today, they would probably be a bit baffled by it. If you were to pull them out of their culture and just drop them right here without 2,000 years of cultural progression, they would be quite confused about the form of church that exists today. Because the truth is, there is nothing sacred about the form of church that we have created. The form is cultural. And that is why some churches are big, some churches are small. Some churches own a building. Some churches rent space, all different types of space. Some churches actually meet in a home. Church doesn't mean a particular model. There's all different models and ways of doing church. So the forms of church change. Clearly, they have changed. If we look all the way back to the time of Saul, Paul, the first Christians, house to house, to what we have here today, the form changes, but it's the spirit behind the forms that stay the same. So whenever we talk about church, there's that spirit behind it that is supposed to guide how we actually operate as a church. The models shift. They will continue to shift as our culture shifts. The spirit behind the models is intended to stay the same. Now, there's this book I ran across a couple years ago, Reading Romans in Pompeii, by the author Peter Oakes. And he offers this description that I think is really brilliant and really helpful for understanding what exactly the church in the first century looked like. So he recreated for us what a church in the first century, specifically in Rome, would have looked like. First off, this church in Rome, first century, it would have met in someone's home, a wealthy craft worker's home. There probably would have been about 30 people in each church. So you have to remember, when Paul writes these letters, let's take the book of Romans for a moment, or the letter to the church in Rome, he's not writing to one specific church. He's writing to clusters of communities. So if someone were to write a letter, let's say the Apostle Paul existed, he lived in Canada, because that seems like a great place for Paul to live. Let's say Paul lives in Canada, and he wanted to come visit us here in Westchester. The letter to us, maybe it's just called to the Church of Westchester. So we would receive that letter, but so would all the other churches here in Westchester, because we are simply one community, one church of many. So whenever Paul writes to the church in Rome, he's writing to many, many different communities, mostly consisting of about 30 people each. And who would have been in these churches? First, you have a craft worker who rents a fairly large workshop. So this is someone who has a lot of money. He's able to rent a large workshop to work his craft, and he also has some separate living accommodation. So he has a shop and he has his home. This is extremely rare. You're in the top percent if this is you in the first century Rome. So he would have attended, along with his wife, children, a couple of male craft working slaves. He would have also attended with a female domestic slave and a dependent relative. Then in the church, you would have had a few other householders, mainly but not necessarily all male, who rent less space than the householder above. So you have this craft worker who's up at the top, and then just below him, you have these other householders who aren't as wealthy as the craft worker. They would have attended with their spouses, most of them, their children, their slaves as well, and any other dependents. Then you would have had a couple of members of families whose householder is not part of the house church, a couple of slaves whose owners are not part of the house church, a couple of free or free dependents of people who are not part of the house church. You would have had a couple of homeless people and a few people who are renting space in shared rooms who would have been migrant workers separated from your from their families. This is a pretty eclectic group of people. This is a wide group, a wide assortment. They have all different backgrounds. These 30 people, their backgrounds are vastly different. They have different social backgrounds, different political backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, but they're all on equal footing in this space. In this church, you have this craft worker who, yes, has a lot of money. You have these slaves. But the truth is, when they gather together as a church, they're all on equal footing. Because what we're going to celebrate here in a moment, the death, the resurrection of Jesus, it changed something. And there was a group of people who gathered together because they believed that through Jesus, something new was happening in the world, and they desire to commit their lives to following that path. Here's Paul in Galatians. He says it this way: there's neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. You have a group of people, all different backgrounds. Church, when it operates as it's at its best, has a group of people who gather together who have vastly wide and different backgrounds. But we all can gather together because we can all place our focus on the resurrected Christ. That is what gathered these first Christians together. So I would say this about church. Church, then, is a group of people, and I think, Gina, you came pretty close to this one. You might have seen my notes earlier. I know. I won't give it away. It's okay. A group of people who intentionally gather together to learn how to follow Jesus with their lives. A group of people who are different socially, politically, culturally, even with different religious backgrounds. Because here in this space, there's no male or female, no Jew or Gentile, free or slave. It doesn't matter. We are all on equal footing because of Jesus. At Awaken, our vision, very simple, keep it basic, create followers of Jesus. We believe that is the spirit behind what church means. All these different forms, all these different models, the spirit behind it, I believe, is this: to create followers of Jesus. What does it mean for us to follow Jesus with our lives? And at Awaken, we said we're doing it three ways. We welcome others into God's love because that's what we see. That's the spirit behind these first century churches. Everyone is welcome. Everyone comes into a space of love because God's love is for everyone. And that's the environment that we desire, that we pray to create here at Awaken. When everyone comes in, we desire that they would feel, that you would feel God's love through this community. We do it by creating communities of belonging. Notice that first century church, you had a bunch of migrant workers who were separated from their families. What were they looking for? Family. A group of people who could support them as they were far away from all the things that they were used to. We've had many, many people here at Awaken who are separated from their families. And to them, I've heard many different times from people say, you know, you guys are like my family. My parents, they live out there in Wisconsin, but this is my family. This is what the church is. This is the spirit behind the church. It's a family. It's why we gather together on Wednesdays, because we want to join with others on this journey. We also do it by loving our neighbors. We show love to each other here, but then it doesn't stay here. The church isn't meant to just exist here for an hour on a Sunday morning. I mean, that's pointless. If you just come here, listen to a sermon, sing some songs, and then leave, and then it doesn't impact the rest of your life whatsoever. No. We come here to experience love so that we can now go out and show love to our neighbors. This is why showing tangible expressions of love to others around us is so crucial to what we do here at Awaken. So when I come to seeing studies that show this, desire for community is up, religion down, openness to spirituality is up, I believe there's two ways we can interpret this. Here's the first way. People are becoming greater heathens. And there's a lot of people who would say this. There are many sermons that are given about our culture and how it is going to hell. I would argue those sermons do not help anyone. They don't help you become a person of love. If someone gives a sermon like that, I would run as fast as you can. What happens with this mentality is you dig your heels in and say, culture is going this way. We're going to do more for God. I don't believe that is the best environment to facilitate your journey of following Jesus. So we can interpret it this way, or we could say the current form of church needs some reimagining. We could say, well, the ways of doing church, they may not be working for everyone. If spiritual openness is up, but people aren't looking to the church, well, maybe there's something about the church that we have to rethink. Maybe these forms, they're not quite working, and maybe the spirit behind the forms that exist today, maybe the forms were great for us 100, 200, 150 years ago, but maybe the spirit is actually doing something new in our midst. And it's our role to discern what that new is, what some of these new models might look like. This is a book I came across called The Great Emergence by Phyllis Tickle, How Christianity is Changing and Why. I came across this book before I started Awaken. This book has deeply, deeply shaped my understanding of the church. According to Phyllis Tickle, here's her thesis of the book. Every 500 years, the church goes through a rummage sale. Have you ever held a rummage sale before? You kind of sort through all your stuff. You look at it. You make a decision. This I want to keep because this is really important to me. But this, what am I doing holding on to this thing? If I can make some money from this, great. I'm going to put this on the table. I'm going to put a $50 sticker on it, and hopefully someone will pay $50 for this old piece of furniture that I've been storing in my basement for 20 years. So according to Phyllis Tickle, every 500 years, the church goes through a rummage sale where it decides we're going to keep this, but this we're going to jettison. This we're going to let go of. And the reason why you hold a rummage sale is because you want to make space for the new. If you keep holding on to everything and packing it all in, well, there's no space for the new to emerge. There's no space for the spirit to work. So you have to let go. You have to make some space in order for the new to be birthed. If we were to go back 500 years, 1500s, we have the little church history 101, Protestant Reformation. We're all familiar with this, right? Martin Luther, he nailed his 95 Theses, 1517. Obviously, 1517 is just a date, but this had been swelling for many years before. So 500 years ago, you had this split. You had this reformation where a group of Christians, followers of Jesus, said, this isn't working anymore. We need to move in a new direction. 500 years before that, who knows their church history? What happened 500 years before the Reformation? I'll give you the answer. 1054, the Great Schism. Are we familiar with this? Separation between the Eastern Church and the Western Church. So we have Eastern Orthodox, and then we have the West. There was this giant split amongst Christians, again, because why? Christians said, this system, this model, this form, it's not working. We need to split off. We're going to actually excommunicate you as heretical, and we're going to now move in our own direction. 500 years before that, you have Pope Gregory I, known as Gregory the Great, Around the year 500, you have the fall of the Roman Empire. You have the beginning of the Dark Ages. This was massive, massive upheaval. Because with the Roman Empire, you had the Holy Roman Empire. Christianity was the religion. Christianity was the religion that's in power. Now, with the fall of the Roman Empire, Christianity begins to change. And at this time, Christianity goes underground. So we've heard of monks and nuns. Around the 500s, the monks, the nuns, they were the ones who preserved the Christian faith. They were the ones who wrote it down. They were the ones who kept carrying the tradition forward. It was a return back to its roots of humility instead of the power and the prestige that had happened during the Roman Empire. Huge, huge shift for the Christian faith. You go back 500 years from here, I'm pretty sure we know what happened 500 years before this. Jesus? We've heard of him before. Major, major shift in religion. What was Jesus doing? He was trying to return people back to God. He wasn't trying to start a new religion. Let's get that clear. That wasn't Jesus' intention. He was trying to return people back to the roots of the Jewish faith. Every 500 years, the church holds a rummage sale. So the question for us then is, are we in the midst of another rummage sale? We're 500 years from the Reformation. Are we in the midst of a rummage sale where we're jettisoning certain ways of doing church so that we can make space for something new? Honestly, this is why I started Awaken. I read this book and was like, oh my goodness, yeah. Because all those studies that I looked at this morning that I showed you earlier in this sermon, I mean, all that, it's what I was experiencing. It's what I was seeing before I started this church. And I had a feeling there's something new. Now, the problem is when something new emerges, it takes quite a bit of time for it to emerge. It's not you go to bed one night and the next day everything is all established and founded. It takes years. And so I said, well, I want to be part of changing. I want to be part of whatever it is that is emerging, part of leading forward this new way, whatever it might look like, of doing church. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. That's the beauty about it. We don't know what church will look like 100 years from now. We don't know what it will look like 50 years from now. But I will say this, church is changing. And as followers of Jesus, I believe it is our duty, it's our role to discern how the Spirit is birthing something new, how the Spirit is birthing new ways of doing church. That's where I want to focus my time, my attention, because there's a rising spiritual openness. There's people that want to explore spirituality, and I don't want to close the door on that group. I don't want Awaken to become a church that exists only for people, for the model works for us, so let's just keep digging our heels into this model because, well, hey, it works for us. Meanwhile, there's many, many other people where it's not working for them and they don't feel like they can come and be a part of the thing that's happening here on a Sunday morning. So how do we shift and how do we listen to what the Spirit is up to? Sometimes the form can get in the way of the Spirit. That's why for us at Awaken, we try to keep things as minimalistic as possible. We have from day one, we will continue until day close. Minimalistic. Because the forms, sometimes they prevent people from coming and hearing the good news of Jesus. And I don't want the form to get in the way of people hearing about Jesus. I want things, I want the boundaries, those distractions to be peeled away so that everyone can hear the good news of Jesus and the grace that is upon all of our lives. So let's close this. We're going to celebrate communion here. And as we close, there are three things that I believe about you. Let's see if I'm right. First, you believe, you're here this morning. You're a part of a church. You're here with us because you believe that there's something about the person of Jesus that reveals the character of God. You believe there's something about Jesus. There's something about who he was, how he lived his life. There's something about his death and his resurrection that reveals the God over all of this, the God that's in all of life. And so you're here because you want to learn more about that God. You're here because you want to experience more of this Jesus. You believe there's something about him, and you want to keep discovering more of what that means for you in your life. Here's the second thing I believe about you. You believe that following Jesus is the best way to live. You believe there's something about this path to Jesus, the path of following Jesus, the life that Jesus offers. You believe that it's leading you into life, into wholeness. When Jesus talks about forgiveness, you might find it difficult, like we all do, but you actually believe that if you were to be a person of forgiveness and love and grace, that your life would feel more whole, more complete. You'd be a person who'd be more at peace if you followed this path of grace and forgiveness and love. And so you believe that learning to follow Jesus, it's the best way for you. It's the way that will lead you into wholeness, the true person that you've been created to be. And here's the third thing I believe about you. You believe that following Jesus is best done in community. How do I know this? Because you're not watching this sermon from your computer, although some of you are. Come out Sunday morning. Yeah, you're here gathered together because you believe that following Jesus can't be done in isolation. Can't be done by yourself with your earbuds in front of your screen. But it actually happens when you gather together with others in the flesh. That's why you're here. Because you realize that you need other people for this journey. Because it can be difficult. And questions arise. And you need the support, the encouragement, and the challenge. That's why we gather here on a Sunday. It's why we gather midweek for our community group as well. And I'd also add this one. I believe that you also desire for others to be drawn into this life as well, this life of following Jesus. You believe it's not just for you, but it's for your friends and for your family. And so you desire to be a person who invites others onto this path simply by the way in which you live your life. So what we'll do here is, as we close this morning, I want to celebrate this ancient ritual that the very first Christians participated in. This ritual where we take the bread, which represents the broken body of Jesus on the cross, and we dip it into the cup, which represents the blood of Christ that was spilled on the cross, and we remember the love of Christ that was poured out on the cross for our healing. This love that speaks over us, you are loved, and you are forgiven. And grace is over each one of you. To me, that is the heart of what it means to be a part of a church, the bread and the cup. So we will continue to keep that at the center of Awaken. And I want to celebrate that this morning as we remember together and as we participate together in this ancient ceremony.